Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. And today we begin our show by talking about a very long-running public radio show aired across the nation. I think I've heard it since its beginning. And it's called Away With Words. And I bet many of you listening in today will have heard it here on WPR stations. I listen, and it's aired 11 a.m. on Sundays, and it's co-hosted by our first guest today, Martha Barnett. Hi, Martha.
Hello. It's great to be here, Larry.
Thanks for joining us, and Grant Barrett. Grant, thank you for joining in.
Hi, Larry.
It's wonderful to have you both here. They'll be in Madison. They're with me by Google Meet at the present, but I can see their smiling faces. They will be with us in Madison Sunday, October 26th, so coming right up for the Wisconsin Book Festival Fall Celebration. I think they're talking at noon at the Madison Public Library. But as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Martha's got a new book out, and it is really a dandy. I had so much fun. I've got it just late. I read it over the weekend and had so much fun with it. It's titled Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. And you are going to learn a lot and have a whole lot of fun if you read her book or when you read your book. You may not have read it yet, but you may have heard Away With Words, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. What do you think about Away With Words? Maybe you have a question. I see we already have at least one question coming up in our email. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You know, just to begin with, there are people listening who have probably not heard the show. Describe Away With Words.
Well, as you said, it's a very long-running public radio show, and it's all about language, about words and how we use them. So that includes all kinds of things like word origins, phrase origins, regional dialects. We love talking about that. Linguistic diversity, grammar, maybe disputes you've had in the office about this or that turn of phrase. And I like to add that weird thing that your grandparent used to say. You know, you don't know if it's their phrase or, you know, if they made it up or if other people say it.
Yeah, my father-in-law said, well, I wonder what the word crupsin means. We're crupsin around. Have you ever heard of that?
Crupsin? Do you know how to spell
crupsin,
it?
Crupsin. K-R-U. I would spell it K-R-U-P-S-I-N. Like we're crupsin around, like maybe fooling around or whatever.
Uh-huh. Well, there are lots of words for that. I've never heard that one, so that makes me really excited. Grant's shaking his head as well, so that thrills us. We'll have to dig deeper on that. Crupsin. I mean, you can kind of guess what it means, right, just from the way that you say it.
Oh, yeah. Crupsin it's around. Fooling around.
Yeah, so, we're crupsing around right now, right?
We're doing a little of that. Grant, what'd you think of Martha's book when you read it? You probably had a hand in a little helping here and there.
No, not at all, actually. I didn't even know that she was going to write so extensively about me. So the best parts of the book are, of course, about me. Just turn to the index, find my name, and all the pages are listed there. No, it's a wonderful book. She's done a great job of capturing what we do on the show and how much delight we get from doing the show. And it's easy to say, oh, he's just saying that. But no, we really enjoy this interplay with all the different ways that people speak, not just in the United States and Canada, but around the world. It's kind of astonishing that this fundamental tool that separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom is something that just gives and gives and gives.
Yeah, we've never run out of things to talk about. I mean, I've been doing this show for 21 years now. And Wisconsin listeners have a lot to do with that. They ask great questions, and we're looking forward to hearing lots more of those when we come to Madison on the 26th.
You know, and Wisconsin Public Radio goes all the way back to the beginning of Away With Words, because ours was the only station or stations carrying Away With Words.
That's true. Yeah, it goes back to our previous co-hosts on the show, Richard Lederer, who's written something like 60 books now about language. He started the show along with Charles Harrington Elster, whose books on pronunciation people might know as well. And they initially did the show, and I think Richard had some kind of connection with Wisconsin. It was based at KPBS here in San Diego, where Grant and I both live. But there was some...
You know what?
What's that?
I looked into it. I looked into it because I was interested in how what the connection was. And then when Jack Mitchell, who was our program director back in the day and a really smart and gifted guy, told me in an email last night one of my co-hosts way back then was Gene Faraca. And Gene Faraca had a wonderful call-in show. And Richard Lederer became one of her regular guests. And so well before the start of Away With Words, Richard was on the show. And you could tell they became great, good friends. And the show was dynamic and lovely, lots of calls and so forth. And so Jack and now myself, and I remember I remembered hearing Richard Lederer on the show. So I'm convinced that Gene Faraca had a lot to do with that, and maybe even something to do with how Away With Words was originally formatted.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And we've always kind of wondered about that, because for a while the show was just on in San Diego and I think Wisconsin, and people thought that that was a kind of a strange combination. But we've since expanded to what, Grant, 44 states, something like that?
Yeah, 300 something signals around the country, and of course by podcast around the world.
I am so pleased to have you as guests, and I want people to know how much you've cared about this show and the effort you put into keeping this show going, as you so well point out in your book, what you had to do to keep Away With Words going, Martha.
Well, yes, Grant and I and our producer, Stephanie Levine, who met her husband there at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She's a graduate of Madison, as well as her husband and their daughter. Anyway, all of us, the three of us, Grant, Stephanie, and I, made a lot of sacrifices in order to keep the show going, because In 2007, right at the beginning of the recession then, KPBS ran out of funds to produce the show. And so they canceled our show and another show. But the three of us thought, you know, our ratings have never been better. The show means so much to so many people. We've got to find a way to keep going. And so eventually we formed a little nonprofit ourselves and do our own fundraising and distribute the show. And the show has since grown, as we said, but there were a lot of lean years. We held down different jobs in order to keep this going, but we just believed in it so much. And the response that we got from listeners also kept us going. We had volunteers working with us to help raise funds, and we've had so much support over the years that we've been delighted to be able to keep going.
And you, and as you said in the book, you went for 3 years without a salary, with no money.
Yeah, Yeah, kind of drained the savings a little bit and, you know, picked up work where we could. But, you know, when you really believe in something that much, you find ways to make it work.
And, Grant, you came on the show in 2007 and replaced Richard Lederer. And one of the fine quotes I think that Martha included in the book was actually something from the New York Times, which called you at the time, you were among a new wave of young, hip lexicographers, which go ahead. How do you interpret it?
I am neither of those adjectives any longer, neither young nor hip. But yeah, that's how I got hooked up with the show. I was a lexicographer, which is somebody who makes dictionaries for Oxford University Press, working on a big historical slang project. And I filled in for Richard Lederer a couple of times. And then they put the call out for a permanent replacement host, and I applied and made it through the process and joined Martha. And so for years, I recorded from New York. And once we got in the same studio, though, once I ended up in San Diego, and we developed a different rapport. It is better to start recording in the same physical space. You see each other's visual cues. And even, you know, right now on this call, we're all on Google Meet. But it's still not the same to have a camera as it is to be in the same space and hear that little sound that Martha makes before she's going to speak. Or even we would do visual things, like we'd put up our finger, meaning I have something to say. But now I think we understand each other's rhythm enough that we record in separate spaces again. So we're kind of back to how we started.
You know, David Appleton has a question relating to the workings of the show, and I wanted to get into that anyway, but let's go to Dave. Dave, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you've got an excellent program, so knowledgeable. You seem to have an answer for almost everything, and I'm wondering, is this personal knowledge, or are you sitting in front of a computer pulling things off the internet as you speak?
You know what? But this is a call-in show, and yours is a call-out show in some ways.
It's true. The show presents as live, and we kind of have to do it that way because it is on a bunch of times all over the country during the week. It's not, you know, it's not a live satellite broadcast. And the nice advantage that comes from it not having to be live is that we get to pick our callers from all the different ways we talk to and with listeners. So if you leave a voicemail or send an email or send a WhatsApp message, you're still considered a candidate for the show. And then we'll go through all that incoming stuff. And Martha and I will pick some people. We're like, oh, yeah, this is something we need to talk about. Talk to our producer. She'll arrange it. And then we schedule everything for a recording session as if it's live. And so we have come into the recording studio knowing who we're going to talk to and what we're going to talk about. And some people feel like that's cheating, but I always say that the premise of this show isn't two people on a high wire trying not to fall. The premise of the show is how can we inform a huge community of listeners about language? And so we want to make sure to get our ducks in a row. Dates correct, titles correct, know what we're talking about. Has any new work been done by our linguist colleagues? That's happening all the time. We read the journals, we read the books, we read everything. Listen to other language podcasts, other language radio shows, so that when we come into the studio, we have boned up. This is like an LSAT every week, you know?
Martha, you got something to add there for sure.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with Car Talk. And our previous producer, the one who preceded Stephanie Levine, actually spent a week with those guys, the Car Talk guys, in Boston to find out how they did their show. And they did their show the same way. It was what is called in the business a call-out show. And so this show is modeled. It's sort of like Car Talk, but for words.
Yeah, I was on a national show for quite a long time, too, called Calling All Pets. And we
set it up. That was a great show. I love that show.
We set it up that way as well, although our producer, I think the range of questions for Calling All Pets was much narrower than it was than it is for you two.
Yeah.
So we would, she would pick, the producer would, out of the couple hundred calls you'd get, she would pick the questions and line them up. And so we wouldn't know what they were, what the questions were going to be, but they were all lined up in a row, and mm-hmm. we would record them all on a Wednesday morning between 8 and whatever, you know, 10.
Yep. Yep.
And Larry, we can do it live. So
yeah.
Martha, yes. Martha's been at this 20 plus years. I've been at it 18 plus years. We both have language careers before this show. And so we know a little bit. And so come see us live, do the Q&A. The Q&A yeah. is always one of the our favorite parts of our live presentations. And you will see us walking along a wire, trying not to fall as we answer your questions.
People on wire.
Oh, boy. Aaron in Madison has something. He's curious about something. So let's hear from Aaron.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First off, love the show. I listen every Saturday. Love it a lot. Yeah. Enjoy it. I have a question that's been... that I've always wanted to ask you guys, and it's about the word ask, where in corporate America, oftentimes instead of saying we have a request, we say that we have an ask. And this started about, 15 years ago is when I first started hearing it. And I'm just wondering, why did that ever become a thing? And by the way, I still find it very annoying whenever my boss says, I have an ask.
So what's the ask? Is the sort of as what Aaron's talking about.
Yeah, well, those kinds of things become jarring or are jarring when you first hear them. But, I mean, have you ever gone to a meet and greet, for example? I mean, a lot of these verbs end up becoming nouns. I'm trying to think of other examples of that, Grant.
Well, my favorite one is if you have an ask, do you have a tell? A tell is a thing that gives you away, you know,
there
like
you
if you're playing poker and trying to bluff. So it's really common for words to be borrowed as another part of speech that's related to the earlier part of speech. And this particular noun form of ask, meaning a question or a request, you know, is hundreds of years old. So.
Yeah, I was going to say that you know, I think something like 20% of English nouns started out as verbs and went through a process of what they call denominalization. It works the other way as well. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the word email, for example, that started out as a noun, but we email each other all the time. It became a verb.
Yeah,
I will say that the modern ask, particularly if you're asking for a donation or you're asking for a price, probably had a resurgence in the 80s because of Wall Street and stock trading. So there's an ask price, and that is shortened in the jargon of Wall Street and the stock market to an ask.
And there you go. The two of you just start talking, and one feeds off the other, and back and forth a bit. You described in your book yourself, Martha, as a high considerateness speaker, and Grant as a high involvement speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the nice ways to put it. Yeah, I mean, I'm from the South. I grew up in Kentucky, and so I have an entirely different way of speaking from Grant's, and both of them are perfectly legitimate. I mean, people in New York, for example, will tend to be, they're high involvement speakers, which means they're listening to you. And one of the ways that they indicate that they're listening to you may be to interrupt or jump in. And, you know, if you're from the South, if you're a recovering Southern belle, like I am, you know, you tend to kind of hang back and listen. And Grant, you probably have things to say about that. So I'll hand the mic to you.
Well, no, I think you're right. So Martha is, as her kind of speaker, more of a turn taker. She sees it more as A, then B, and then A, and then B. And what I see it as collaboration, where two people can, or more can talk at once. And the conversation is a flow, like a river, with lots of streams coming together. And so these are both absolutely ordinary ways of speaking across the human world. But if you are more of one than another, you might see the other person either as slow, if they're a turn taker like Martha, or rude, if they're a collaborative speaker like me.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to be aware of when you're talking with other people, because as I said, both of those ways of speaking are legitimate. And if you recognize that, then it, you know, you can each make adjustments, which Grant and I have learned to do over the years.
Yeah, we've structured the show a little bit to give Martha the space so I'm not automatically treading on her toes.
Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett, our guests today. They are co-hosts, co-producers of Away with Words. Martha has a new wonderful book out called Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. Great to have them with us. And you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today with Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett, the co-hosts of Away with Words, a radio show. You hear it on Sunday mornings at 11 on our NPR news stations. Martha's also an author, and her newest book is Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. Lots of people online to visit and on the phone. Our phones are all full, as I expected they would be. But Mary in Middleton, let's go to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Larry. I first want to thank you all for all the wonderful years of entertainment and education that I've gotten listening to your shows. And Martha, I'd like to tell you about my mother, who was educated as an English teacher in the early 1940s. And later had nine children that were brought up with very correct English. And when I first told her about Away with Words, Richard Lederer was on, and I would call her. She lived in La Crosse. I was in Middleton to let her know about Away with Words. And after the show was over, I would call her back, and we would always have this wonderful discussion about what we had learned and the entertainment that you had given us. And that continued to be, as she got dementia, one of her favorite times and memories.
Oh, Mary, that's a lovely, lovely memory. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That really is true about the show, that that we hear from people who say, you know, I heard this word on your show, and I know my dad used to say it, and I called him up, and we had a long conversation about it. And I love it when people compile family lexicons. You know, they put together a list of all these words that that the family used and they remember. And so that's a really precious memory that you had. And that's the kind of thing that keeps Grant and me going with the show. So thank you for sharing that.
You hear me. I'm sure you get a lot of wonderful feedback.
Oh, we do indeed. Yes.
Catherine in Ironwood, Michigan. Your turn. Hi, Catherine.
Hi there. I love both of your shows, everybody's shows. My question is about a single word. I'm 74 years old. I got my first dog when I was 4 years old, and my mother said, if you want them to go out and do their business, you say, "Up's the poozer." And I've said that for 70 years.
Up's the poozer.
Last year, when I realized how old I am, I thought, you know, come on, is this a real word? I don't know. But and every dog responded to it without problem. Every dog.
And we would spell that UPSAPOOZER. Up's a poozer.
That's a new one on me. I haven't heard that one. But, you know, that would be a great call to talk about what you tell your dog. I used to tell my dog, hurry up, because I read some book by a bunch of monks who raise dogs in upstate New York, and that's the term they use. Hurry up, hurry up. But upsapoozer is... That'll get you going, right?
Yeah, kind of sounds like ups a daisy.
Yeah, but poozer.
But poozer, and poozer kind of like poocher.
Yeah.
Pooch.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're, you know, I'm just, having read your book,
yes.
Now, at least I think more. I look at words different. I've been looking at words a little more differently since just reading the book. It's a book that I will hang on to, I think, forever, because there's so many interesting usages. There are phrases in there that in your book that I am sure to want to use. And when I see somebody kind of mad, I'm going to say, well, who licked the red off your candy?
yeah, who licked the red off your candy? And that's an expression that I learned from one of our listeners. And that's another one of the joys of the show, is that Grant and I both learn so much from, I mean, people are basically crowdsourcing language here and information about language. And we really appreciate everybody who does that. But yeah, a listener called us to say that, I think it was her mother used to always say, well, who licked the red off your candy? Which I think is such an evocative phrase for, you know, what are you so angry about? But it comes from a song that was kind of this joke song by a guy named Little Jimmy Dickens. And it's a real toe tapper. You can find recordings of him singing Who Licked the Red Off Your Candy on YouTube. But, you know, the idea is that a little girl had a lollipop and a dog licked the red off.
Well, there's another story. You're going to laugh a lot. After you read this book, you're going to laugh a lot. And it's based on so many things, not only your own life, which was really fascinating in and of itself, Martha, but it based on the thousands of calls, millions of calls probably that you've had and the enlightenment that one gets from this sort of engagement. One story, I definitely want to have you tell this story about how different words mean different things to people. And you tell a story in the book, which came from the show itself, and it had to do with a caller coming in. She was in Canada, wanted to get a knit cap.
Mm-hmm.
She was from North Carolina or someplace.
Yeah, she was from North Carolina, and she went into a coffee shop in Canada because it was particularly cold. And she asked this coffee shop happened to sell merchandise, and the merchandise included these warm woolen caps. And so she said, yeah, I'd like a cup of coffee and a toboggan. And the person looked at her like, what? Because toboggan can mean a couple of different things, depending on where you're from. It can mean either a warm woolen cap or a sled. And the term goes back to the Algonquian family of languages, where that were a similar sounding word meant a kind of wooden sled. And over time, it also came to mean the kind of hat that you might wear on that kind of sled that had the same curve to it.
I'm thinking back to your conversation. You worked for 12 years with a professor, off and on, Leonard Lutkowski, about languages. And I think he said languages aren't arbitrary. There are faintly visible footprints if you know how to look for them or where to look for them.
Yeah, and that's one of the joys of etymology, that there are hidden connections between and among words that are hiding right there in plain sight if only you know how to look for them, in part because so many languages arose from Proto-Indo-European, this prehistoric language that like a tree, sent out roots and branches all over the world, or all over much of the world, so that that we have cognate terms in different languages as different as Irish and Russian and Greek and Italian and English. And if you know about those roots, then you can start making connections between and among those words and see the roots, these linguistic fossils that are right there inside a single word. Every word has a story to tell. And so yes, as my tutor said, Professor Litkovsky said, language is not arbitrary at all.
Sharon and DePere, what's on your mind?
Hi, love your show. I'm an English major and a librarian, so words Whoa. Are my thing.
Nice.
I get concerned about the new generation with texting and social media and clipping words and clipping phrases. Is good language going to go away with all of this kind of change in our language?
Grant, what do you think?
Well, I would say that this question has been around as long as language has been around. I think Plato argued about it. And also, as long as texting has been around, which we're talking about more than 30 years now, people have been talking about what texting is doing to the language. And so far, it has contributed maybe a handful of lexical items to English, but otherwise it's had no impact, outside the technological terms. But the larger interesting thing when you talk about clipping words, I love the P.G. Woodhouse books, the Bertie Wooster and Jeeves stories. And these books, I think written from the 30s through the 60s, have Bertie Wooster, who's this kind of flighty, wealthy, I don't know what you would say, upper class person who's always getting into scrapes and trying to help out his friends and things go wrong. But he clips books. He clips words throughout the books, throughout the stories, obviously abbreviated as obs, for example. And so this kind of clipping in slangy everyday language is nothing new as well. And as a matter of fact, abbreviations as a matter of writing go back to the oldest written documents that we can find, where in order to conserve space, the scribe, whatever their medium, whether it be parchment or clay, would just put the few key consonants of the word or the name. And just so you got the point, but you didn't need it spelled out, didn't need it elaborated. So it is very ordinary to shorten words in all languages of the world.
Very good. As you were talking, I was thinking about what I would tell my broadcast students in classes. I would say if you write it in active voice, it's going to be about 20%. You'll use 20% fewer words than if you write it in passive voice. That's a different way to kind of a little different take on what you were talking about. But active voice is more efficient and also more conversational.
Yeah, I think it can be very, very effective. I would just add, in terms of that last call, that librarians are heroes to Grant and me. So
yes, absolutely.
So, yeah,
on our short list, there's room in the boat for you. So,
Rusty and Portage, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi! I'm a big fan of the show. I was also a fan of the show Says You. I enjoy programs about words. And they used to have a segment that they said, well, what's the difference? For instance, what's the difference between a graveyard and a cemetery? Well, a cemetery is non sequitur and a graveyard is attached to a church. I didn't know that until I heard it. But I'd like to know what's the difference between flotsam and jetsam?
Are you from a sailing or naval background?
No, but I've read a lot, and I've seen the term used several times.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah, so we use these to meet odds and ends, but they come from Latin originally. There's a word, the flotsam comes from a word meaning to float, and jetsam comes from a word meaning to throw. And so flotsam is stuff that isn't meant to be in the sea, like maybe it is from a shipwreck or something that washed out into the sea. And jetsam is stuff that you have deliberately thrown into the sea.
There you go, Rusty. Thank you very much for calling. Kimberly wondered if there's your thoughts on the overuse of some phrases, like there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do as radio hosts is try not to fall back on our own crutches, our own things, the phrases that are where you go when you're still organizing your thoughts. And one of the things we also try to teach our listeners is that when you find yourself confronted with a linguistic prejudice in your own mind or something irritates you, ask yourself why it is. And often it's because we don't understand what's happening. And in this case, if you allow the other person a break and say, oh, they're just organizing their thoughts, they want to be clear, they want to connect with me, then you're going to find yourself much more relieved. You're going to find yourself quite relieved. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's why they're leaning on these phrases so heavily. That's why they're taking this extra time or this extra space to get it right.
I remember just from a couple of weeks ago, someone called with a phrase or a word, and I can't remember it now, but in trying to answer it, You use the word as a way, you know, as part of, as you were talking about, Grant.
Yeah.
Moving yourself from one to the other, and you had an awful time getting out of that.
Yeah.
It's an I can't remember, but
it might have been yeah, we those, but sometimes we do it just to tease each other and goad each other. Me and Martha like to do that across the mic, or just to let the listener know that we're treating this with a great deal of humor, and we don't consider any real language problems to be, you know, unless it's something congenital or it has to do with something unfortunate happening with somebody's body or brain. We mostly don't consider these to be life-threatening. You know, we don't consider these to be signs of the apocalypse.
Well, I appreciate how, and we try to do this on this show too, is to honor our callers and honor our people and treat everyone with respect, which I think is even in your stated goal for the for the show. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. Boy, you know, we could have spent a lot more time here talking about this, but we, radio, we're going to talk about cranberries next, but, and it's going to be an interesting conversation. And,
absolutely.
And it's been a fun one with you two, and Martha and Grant, thank you so much for what you do and for the wonderful show you produce. I love it. And the book.
Thank you, Larry.
The book is great.
Well, thank you. We are really looking forward to coming to the book festival. We just did a book festival here in California. I just got back from one in Tennessee. And book festivals are just the best. You know, just all these kindred spirits there. And people are so lovely. And we just can't wait to get to Madison.
And thanks to everyone. Sorry. Collaborating there.
And one of my best pals.
Thanks to everyone who called it. Sorry.
One of my best pals heads up the book festival. And you're going to enjoy her. And you're really going to like the main library. It's going to be
fantastic.
A sight to behold. Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett. So much fun talking with them. Their show is titled Away with Words. You can hear them Sunday mornings. Listen in with me at 11 o'clock as I listen to it on Sunday mornings. And Martha's book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land, which you're going to enjoy a lot. You're going to laugh. You're going to find out a lot more about this show and about Martha. And you're going to appreciate all of the words and phrases you're going to learn about. Lots there. And as I said, coming up, we are going to turn our attention to cranberries. We are a big producer of cranberries here in Wisconsin. We're the leaders, and we're going to talk with one of the leaders of the cranberry industry. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Turning our attention to cranberries here.